Love Talk Radio.
Don't go to bed with no price on your head. No, no.
Don't do it.
No, no. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to What Time Is It? The first live international web radio show about watches and the people who love them. I'm your host, Jerome Pinault. I welcome you to the show. I'm speaking to you live from Switzerland today, as usual. This is a live show. Our number here is area code 760-683-2652 if you want to call in and talk to our guest. Of course, if you're calling from Switzerland, you'll need to dial plus one or 001. This is the only live show where you, our listeners, get to call in and talk to the watch industry movers and shakers one-on-one. And speaking of those today, our guest is a giant in the industry, actually. He was born in England, ended up moving to Switzerland, and worked for Renault and Papy, which is now, I believe, an Audemars Piguet subsidiary. And he met a gentleman called Robert there. Then he went out on his own, became a consultant, and built a company called Complete Time. And then eventually, in 2004, I believe, he started Grobel and Forsay. And Grobel and Forsay is one of the most amazing companies out there. They're renowned for incredible, amazing tourbillon complications and absolutely spectacular finishes on their watches. And these watches range in price from about $300,000 to $750,000. So we're talking high-end artwork here. Collectors look at these pieces and weep with joy. Stephen Forsay, you're one of the major successes in the horology world and one of its most respected players. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. How are you?
Hi, Jerome. Good to be talking to you today. Yeah, everything's good here in La Chaux-de-Fonds, and it's great to be with you and to be able to talk to your readers, your listeners, and share a little bit about what we do.
Awesome. Thanks for taking the time. The first thing I want to ask you is, how do I pronounce your company? Am I pronouncing it right in English? What's the right way to do this?
It's Grobel Forsay.
Grobel Forsay. Okay,
Grobel
thanks
Forsay.
A lot.
Yeah.
I always wonder about that. It's a lot easier in French, probably. Hey, listen, I want to ask you, how did you start out with watches? Did you have mechanical inclinations, design inclinations? Is it a family thing? How did you get started in the horology world?
Okay, well, from my side, as you mentioned, I'm originally from England, and I'm a first generation watchmaker in my family. So no watchmakers in my parenthood side, you know. But however, a strong interest in mechanics. My grandfather was in the automobile and aviation industry, and his son-in-law, my father, was an industrial chemist, but passionate about vintage cars. So I grew up from a very young age with a load of spanners and restoring cars and things. So I had a strong desire and appreciation for mechanics, and it all started from there, really.
Got it. And then you decided to go into watches and movements, or who
well,
did you
yeah,
have a mentor?
It's a few years ago now. We're looking back sort of 30 years to when I was at school and thinking about which direction my career would take. My grandfather supposed naturally I would go into engineering, but having done a week's work experience in a precision engineering company, I realized that this whole side of engineering was going through a huge mutation. You had new technology coming through, and the whole face of it was changing. Through a chance meeting with a fellow vintage car enthusiast, a contemporary of my father's, who had an antique clock repair shop. And there in the back of his antique clock shop, he had the machines, lathe, milling machine, drill, etc., to make all the different parts to restore clocks with. And there I saw, for me, was the sort of the natural link between mechanics and the more artistic side, which just fitted. And from there on, it was really, I suppose I was smitten by the bug of horology somehow.
Got it. Is it fair to say that Global Force is pretty much focused on? I mean, you put the T in tourbillon, didn't you? You're the guys for that. Am I off on that?
Well, hopefully we've put back the question, the complication of the tourbillon. We've given it a new place back up there with the best of mechanical wristwatch complications. And so for Robert and myself, Robert also a watchmaker, but on his on Robert's side, his father was had a watch repair shop, so Robert followed was able to follow in the family footsteps there. But for both of us as watchmakers, the tourbillon was a very significant and fantastic it's a really captivating mechanism to look at and admire.
Absolutely.
And study. And so from our research and our own experiences, we felt that it was a subject which merited some close attention.
Gotcha. Absolutely. And you did obviously the amazing job. Can you take us through what it takes to build one of your pieces from scratch? I mean, how long does it take? How many people are involved? What kind of machinery? I think I read somewhere that you guys produce in factory over 70% of all parts, including the screws. Am I right about that? Can you take us through the process there?
Yeah, of course. We have our facility, our new facility, where everybody's under one roof since about the last 18 months now. So
yep.
The fall of 2009, we moved in. In-house, we're able to really take an initial concept, an idea which might be on paper or even an idea in germ of an idea in our heads, in Robert or myself or with our team. And then to take that initial idea to define a concept, to elaborate this concept on using the very latest computer-aided design technology in three dimensions. So we're able to advance that to a certain stage, but at some point you still have to go and actually make a physical prototype. So
yep.
As you mentioned, we have a certain capacity in-house. We don't pretend that we make absolutely everything because as watchmakers, we understand, obviously, the whole process to make a complete watch, and there are many, many different skills and professions and disciplines there. So we're looking at about 30 different skilled professions individually to complete a watch.
Wow, 30 different people.
Yeah, so it's about 30 different, really, skills. You know,
skill sets, right.
Yeah, exactly. So from the very beginning, designing, a technician, engineer, working on the computer to design to the very, very finest perfection, the mechanism, refine that, simulate as much as he can virtually, virtual prototyping, if you like, before actually making a life-size physical prototype. And so when you start to do that, of course, you have technicians on machines, micro mechanics, people who make the turn components, like you say, the screws, machine the plates, cut the wheels, the pinions, and then you have to do the whole of the finishing process. There's real actual functional finishing, the pivots, the bearings of each individual spindle, arbor, and gear, which have to be done. And once you have a whole kit of the components, which you're looking for one of our timepieces at between sort of 280 and 690 components in a movement.
Wow.
So
okay.
It's a lot of parts to bring together. When you've got all those together, then you can start to assemble with the watchmaker, technician who's going to actually build the movement up. And when he's building the movement in a prototype stage, he needs to analyze what he's doing. Is everything good? Does he have the right function? Are the components correct, etc.? So there's all these phases of quality control as well, which are coming in, very important. And when he's actually got the prototype assembled, if it works, then that's great. And then
if not, you're in trouble.
And if not, then you have to go back a step. But, this is what takes time. And so for Global Force, even from our very first invention, the double tourbillon 30 degree, a two-cage one-angled cage at 30 degrees inside a second cage system. It took us 4.5 years from the initial idea to go through the whole prototyping stage, to test, to really refine the system until we were happy with the performance, and then to actually get to the first finished timepiece. So there's a lot of work there, you know, and it's something which you can do quickly. You can design a mechanism, and you make it, and you say, wow, I've done it in 6 months or a year, but you don't have time to test it. And with a mechanical watch, you need to be able to really take the time to test it, because a watch we expect to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which means that you cannot accelerate this whole process. You just have to wait, and you have to be patient.
It must be a huge financial investment in each piece as well, right? I mean, this is we're not playing with small time here. This is some serious investment, and no mistakes are probably even remotely possible.
Well, it's you know, as you say, it's there is because you're taking a lot of time. It takes several years to bring an idea through concept and prototyping to a finished timepiece. There is a lot of investment to develop each new mechanism, and because they are mechanisms which are not stock available off the shelf, pretty much everything has to be designed. Say 95%, 98% of the components in a movement, so looking at hundreds of parts, have to be designed individually in-house. And then, of course, we have to make them. We have to do the hand finishing, which represents many hundreds of hours of work for each movement. And so this whole process, of course, represents an important investment. And as is necessary in any business, you know, you have to make the least mistakes as possible. But you know, by pooling our approach with a team of professionals, which are very complementary, you know, we're also pooling our maximum, our strong points, and through our own R&D platform, if you like, which is called Experimental Watch Technology, where we're taking these concepts and we're spending the time to refine, to test, and to validate. We're also able to you know, maximize our efficiency along the way and avoid costly errors as much as possible.
So, Global Forcer, are you going to stay focused on tourbillon complications for the foreseeable future, or do you guys have anything up your sleeve that might be away from the tourbillon, or are you just staying put there?
Well, that's always a good question, Jerome. Thanks very much. But, of course, it's a bit difficult to talk too early about specific projects, but I think what we can say is what we've already shown, as I mentioned, through our experimental watch technology platform. Our first three inventions in the tourbillon, the double tourbillon 30 degrees, the quadruple tourbillon, and the 24-second incline tourbillon, these are already validated and they're already available as finished timepieces in different variations. But beyond that, already in 2007, we showcased a prototype movement which had a very special oscillator, the heart of the watch, really, the balance wheel and spring system, where we had been looking at this from a different angle. So that's a work in progress. And this, you know, is an example. This is still in progress. So 4 years later, we're still working on this whole idea. So that's something which is actually outside the tourbillon. Then in 2008, we had the differential d'égalité system, which is in the gear train of the movement and helps to smooth power supply. So, you know, again, another example. So we do have other subjects we're looking at. But I think the important thing to try and get across, perhaps, to your listeners is going to be that Global Forcer is about bringing a new, fresh look at watchmaking complications. Or can be outside the tourbillon, but to be able to offer something different, you know, either improved precision or performance or the usability for the collector of each specific complication.
Yeah, because invention is. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great insight. Invention is definitely part of your DNA, from what I understand and what I've seen. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about. On the business side, you and Robert, your partner there, how do you guys divide responsibilities when, you know, running the company? Who manages what team? How do you guys work this out? Tell me, what's a typical day at Global Forcer?
Well, we have, it's a little bit unusual because Robert, as I mentioned, Robert and myself, both watchmakers by training, and but thanks to our complementary professional career paths that we've had, we were able to pull together a lot of wider skill sets, and so from very early on, from when Robert and I started to work together in 1999. Before, you know, very beginning of the idea for Global Forcey. From there on, we decided that, there were already two watchmakers working together, and we were happy to share our knowledge, our experience, and to build a small team. So there's already this this idea of sharing our know-how. From there, between Robert and myself, we clearly defined each one of us centers of responsibility. So Robert supervises and oversees the commercial side, the creation side, so that's the design of the timepieces, and the strategy, as well as the administration, the economic side. And then I oversee all of the technical part behind the scenes, or along the whole way through the design office for the movement, for the laboratory,
right,
for prototyping, and even for decoration, making the components. These are how we very early on separated the responsibilities.
Got it.
So we've been able to stick very clearly to these paths. I think that's been a strength for what we've been doing. And
yep.
So by the time you got to, from the beginning with CompuTime, as you mentioned, then Global Forcey, we launched in 2004. By 2008, we had a good amount of success, and our team was growing strongly. And so at the end of 2008, for January 2009, we were very happy to be able to reinforce our management team with Emmanuel Vuy as our CEO.
Okay.
And Emmanuel has already a long experience in the watch industry. He's more a financial background, but as joining us as CEO, that's enabled Robert and myself to free up some energy and time to be able to concentrate on future creations and ideas. And so you can imagine with you're building a team and you get to a certain size,
right,
you can end
you guys
up spending the whole time with operations.
You guys have, like 100 people now?
Yeah, so we're just Global Forcey and CompuTime together. It's just over 100 people in total. So, it's a small, medium-sized concern, which has to be run with all of the challenges and of course, advantages or pleasures that come with that. Yeah.
Sure. Cool. Hey, now, so unless I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your timepieces, price-wise, range between $300 and, the last one's $750,000, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious, who buys these things? I would imagine collectors, obviously. Your customer must surely be somebody who understands horology deeply, technically, and product-wise. Can you give me a little insight on who your typical buyer might be?
Well, when you're looking at timepieces at this sort of level, you're not looking at, of course, I think it's, as your listeners will surely be aware, they're not gem set timepieces, so they... Okay, they have precious metal cases, but they're really, as you say, technical innovation and hand finishing, showcasing the very best of hand finishing with many hundreds of hours. We can only make a small number of timepieces each year, so with just over 100 timepieces were made for Global Forcey, by Global Forcey, for the whole world in 2010. So it's a very, very small number. So, but as you say, in relation to our end client, it's we're looking at quite a lot of professional entrepreneur level people. They're usually pretty low profile people. They're not looking often at high profile people, but they usually have a strong interest in watchmaking. That's that's an interesting point.
That would
but
make
they
sense.
Love to use their timepieces, and this is fantastic. Also, that you know, that they're actually going to enjoy the timepiece and use it.
They,
you know,
they better enjoy it. At I would
well,
hope.
We,
so.
Well, of course, you know, yeah, that's,
every day.
And, yeah, yeah. Well, we have collectors who really wear their timepieces regularly, but these are people who, for the most part, they are often very well versed, and we have a lot of interesting conversations with them, you know, from time to time about what they would like in the future, and so on. And this is very interesting exchange.
How are things going in the Asian markets and China specifically? Any bites from there? I mean, clearly there must be some very interested buyers from from that continent.
Well, Global Forsey is not a very very well known name yet today. I mean, we're well known amongst a small network of established collectors, but widely spread around the world, and we are strong in Asia, but we have a good spread worldwide, which is pretty even. So we're not flooding, if you could flood, a particular market with pieces, but it's more a question of gradually, slowly building the network. You know, we're looking at just a few timepieces in each country each year, so it's something which is quite a special occasion, and our clients appreciate the rarity and the special nature of each individual timepiece that they decide to add to their collection.
Sure. How about the U.S.? Lots of folks in the U.S. into
As I said, it's really an even spread. We have good representation, strong in the United States and across the whole of the Americas as well. South American clients also with a strong interest, and Europe also performs well. And as you say, Asia is a developing market. I mean, there is a big potential there. I think there are also many collectors out there who don't yet know very much about. Perhaps they've never seen Global Forsey, because you won't see much advertising on a large scale for our timepieces.
Right.
We don't have the production possibility to be able to make a larger number.
Right.
So it means it remains a very very small
selective
object.
It's a different scale. Great. Listen, I want to talk to you about SIHH. I know obviously you guys were there big time. You were showing Invention Piece 2 there. I think that's the $750,000 watch, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And I was very lucky actually to score a day pass for SIHH myself. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to come and see you guys, which I regret. Uh-huh. But nevertheless, give us some insight. How was the piece received? How was SIHH for you guys this year? I know you're not going to Basel. I guess you made a selection there. Talk to me about SIHH.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, Basel was where we launched Global Forsey in 2004, and we were very pleased to be able to go there until last year. So being able to exhibit at SIHH was a fantastic possibility. And last year, our first year, we were very much the newcomers and, I suppose, a novelty. But this year also, not everybody had seen us last year, and so it was it's a good place for us to be able to be close to our clients. Although it's mostly for us a very strong element is to spread awareness about Global Forsey, so we can reach a much larger media coverage in SIHH than we could in Baselworld in relation to what we do. You know, where we're not seeking to produce in commercial larger quantities our timepieces. So to remain very focused on what we do and what we enjoy doing, which is the invention, the creation, and the finishing, SIHH enables us really to fill that very well. So
good.
So we were delighted to be back this year in January 2011. And as you mentioned, the invention piece too, we were also, it was a great moment to be able to share this this timepiece. Perhaps for your listeners who've been following a little bit, they will have seen in relation to our first invention, the double tourbillon 30 degrees invention piece one in 2007. And then in 2009, there was a jump. We had our third invention. And everybody had been asking, you know, when's invention piece two going to come? Is there going to be an invention piece two with the quadruple? And it takes time. You know, the quadruple was actually validated as a timepiece after the 24 seconds. So the quadruple as a timepiece came out in 2008. And so it's taken time. You know, it's over 2 years work, even for the quadruple as invention piece two, to remake the whole construction of the movement, to showcase the invention, and to create this very, very distinctive and special architecture of the timepiece, which
definitely
Robert has been doing. And, you know, we feel it's a beautiful piece.
Interesting.
And, I have
Stephen,
to say we had a lot of strong feedback there.
Stephen, I want to visit your factory.
Please okay.
Invite me over to your factory. We're basically neighbors.
Jerome,
it would
be a great pleasure.
Great.
Yes.
I think I got to set that up. You know, the first time I heard about Global Force was through an employee of yours, Boon Chong. He's the guy I met, and he's the guy who made me discover your brand, and I've been following it ever since with eyes wide open. And I was like, holy
absolutely.
Jesus, you know.
Because
as I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm new to the world of horology, and you guys pretty much kind of wrote the book, or at least one of the books on there, so that's
well,
great.
We've got a chapter, you know, perhaps, or
a couple of chapters
anyway, but, you know.
If you don't mind, Stephen, we're reaching the end of the show here. There's a bunch of questions I like to ask all our guests, and if you got a couple of minutes left for me, I think I'm going to do that with you because I'd love to hear your answer. The first question I would like to ask you, hang on a second, let me see if I can do this here.
Well, we're moving on now.
Nah, that's not good. How about this? All right, Jeopardy music here. I don't know, just playing with the audio here. If you weren't in the watch business, Stephen, what do you think you would be doing?
You know, well, I would, if I hadn't discovered horology, I would have probably gone into the aviation industry.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
The person you admire the most in the watch world?
Oh, that's a good question.
That seems to be a tough one for everybody, but I don't know why.
Yeah, difficult. Well, I mean, I think, you know, from my standpoint, I was very fortunate to be able to meet George Daniels when I was studying watchmaking in London. 25 years ago now, and
gotcha.
And that was certainly, you know, a moment of inspiration. A great figure from modern horology. So
no doubt,
I have to say that there's a man there. Yeah.
Gotcha. Who's the most important person in your life, Stephen?
Ah, my wife or my children. I can't choose between them.
That's a great answer. And last question: your favorite time of the day?
The morning, actually, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the morning. Yeah.
Good time for inventions, huh?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, Stephen, for taking this time to enlighten us and share with us the magic of Global Force and the company and the amazing products
you've
given the world throughout the years. That's all the time we have today, folks. I did want to mention, you guys do have a website. You want to give that out? And let
we do, of
to...
course. So please feel free to visit global4c.com for more information. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
Yep.
So, we do have other forums. I won't do too much wide advertising and such, but we do have one
awesome.
Or two forums and some good following there. And you know, for a group of collectors, please feel free to follow our work and the adventures at Global Force and take a look at the Neuchâtel Mountains where we are sited in La Chaux-de-Fonds. It's a UNESCO.
Great.
Listed in the heritage site, so, you know, it's,
awesome.
It's an interesting area. Thank you.
Yep, no doubt. Thank you, Stephen, very much. And
okay, Jerome.
This is it for us. Thank you to our listeners all over the world. And I want to remind you, thank you, Stephen. I want to remind everybody this show and past ones are archived on our site at blogtalkradio.com/whattimeradio. And you may also check out our own website at whattimeradio.com. I'm Jerome Pinot. My website is jeromepinot.com. If you need a social media strategist, give me a buzz, give me a holler. And last couple of seconds here. Next week, we have another amazing award-winning guest. Guess who that could be? His name is Jean-Claude Biver. And everybody pretty much knows who he is. He's my ex-boss. He runs Hublot. And if you look up Watch Industry Legend in the books, you will find his picture there. So next week, we're going to hang out with Jean-Claude Biver. We're going to talk about watches. We're going to talk about climbing Tibetan mountains. We're going to talk about cheese, and we're going to talk about horology innovation. Until next week, I bid you all farewell. I thank you very much for having spent some time with us. We hope you had a good time. And see you next week. Same watch channel, same watch time. Thank you all.
Don't go to bed with no price on your head. No, no.
Don't do it.
No, no. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.